Blog Talk Radio.
Diving stop by Beltran, and he throws out Kanzler.
Folks, he's the total package right there.
It's the Adrian Beltran Show tonight here in Texas.
Rattle and Hum Sports.com presents the Rattle and Hum Sports Podcast.
Off the screen, gets the pass, shot clock at 7. Nowitzki against Hercules, backs in, falling away, puts it up, banks it in! Oh, what a tough shot from Nowitzki! And the Mavericks take a 2-point lead with 5.9 remaining.
RattleandHumSports.com, the number one site for sports, entertainment, and anything that we find interesting. And now, your host of the Rattle and Hum Sports Podcast, Brian Houston.
Hello and welcome on this Sunday evening to Rattle and Hum Sports Live. I'm Brian Houston. The Dallas Cowboys fall to the Green Bay Packers in the divisional playoffs, 26-21, ending an incredible and very unexpected season by these Dallas Cowboys. But the manner in which this game was decided was kind of a gut punch to all Cowboys fans, I know. And with us to talk about that particular play and all the other things that went on and what was really a fantastic football game is Matthew Postens, who covers the Dallas Cowboys for Rattle and Hum Sports. And Matthew, how are you, first of all?
I'm fine, Brian. So what happened at the end of the game? Did I miss something?
Yeah, yeah, I think you missed it. You must have been stepping out for nachos or something like that. We've got to get right to that. I think that's the first and most important thing to talk about. It's fourth down and two, a little over 4.5 minutes to go in the ball game. Number one, Jason Garrett makes, one of those huge cojones calls to throw the ball deep downfield. And Dez Bryant makes what appears to be one of the most unbelievable catches that I have ever seen. And then the pass, after being reviewed, is called incomplete because he did not maintain possession of the ball through the catch and apparently did not make a football move in the process. All I'm going to say about that is if he wasn't making a football move, I'd like to know what it was he was doing. But that being said, your thoughts about the reversal by the officials on that catch?
Well, you know, the first time I saw the play in real time as it was going on, I thought it was a catch. I thought it wasn't a touchdown because he got to the 1 foot line, but I thought it was a catch. And then just before they went to commercial, they showed the replay again, and they showed him flipping over as he went to the ground. He started rolling over to his left, and I saw the ball come out. And I thought to myself, oh man, I've seen that before. And sure enough, yep, I did see that before in person. Everybody talks about the catch Calvin Johnson in 2010 where he braces himself with the football in the end zone after making the catch and loses the football. Everybody saw that on TV. I saw this in person about 7-8 years ago at a Buccaneers game. Same kind of scenario. Receiver catches the football in the back of the end zone, makes what I think is a clean catch. He's going to the ground, and once he gets to the ground, he loses control of the football briefly. Same thing happened in this case. John Gruden throws the review flag, challenges it, and it's overturned. So this has happened 3 times now in the past 6-7 years. I don't agree with the rule. The rule says you have to maintain possession of the ball throughout the process of going to the ground. Now, somebody has to explain to me what the process of going to the ground is. But the way the rule was applied on this challenge by Mike McCarthy, it was correct. You can say all you want about not agreeing with the rule, and I don't think it's in the spirit of a catch. I think Dez Bryant made a catch. I think he had possession of the ball. I think he took two steps and made a football move. I think that his elbow hit the ground first before the ball hit the ground. But by letter of the rule, the call that Gene Steratore made after the review was correct.
I would agree with you. Only the only thing I dispute there is the idea that he did not make a football move. And to me, again, that's to me where they blew the call. I understand everything else you say, and I agree with it, and I understand the letter of the rule and the fact that you've got to maintain it. But he was making a football move. If that's not a football move, I don't know what is, because he does that all the time. He's reached out. He's athletic. He dove for the end zone. I mean, it was absolutely a football move. There was no question about that.
I agree with you completely. It's the NFL rulebook and Gene Steratore who don't agree with you. And even Mike Pereira after the game, you know, Howie Long thought it was a catch on the broadcast. And he actually questioned Pereira a little bit, pressed him a little bit. And Pereira said that to him, watching the play, he did see Bryant's arm go out toward the end zone, toward the goal line. But he said he didn't feel like Bryant's arm stretched out enough for it to constitute a football move. But I don't agree with him. I think it was a football move. I think everything in this process was in the spirit of it being a catch. The rule book, the rule needs to be fixed. But that's the rule, and that's what you got to live with.
Yeah, I understand. Again, you know, the interpretation that that's not a football move is the thing that I think bugs me the most. I was the same as you. When I saw the ball on the replay going into the commercial break and I saw the ball bounce and come out, I looked at my watch and we were both talking about it. She was just thrilled. So it was a great catch. I said, don't be surprised if they overturn this. It's, you know, just don't be surprised if they overturn it. The other thing was brought up, I heard this, Norm Hitzkus brought this up, and I don't know if you heard this or not in one of those many post-game shows or on the radio in the Dallas area, but when Bryant, after he made the catch and he went down and his elbow hit the ground, there was contact between him and the defender. So by rule, he should have been down, and whether the ball came out or not would have been a moot point. At this point, contact was made.
In that case, that would be correct. I looked at that play a couple of different times after that, and I didn't see – I saw contact between Bryant's leg and Shields' leg as he caught the football as he was going to the ground, but I didn't see any significant contact between the two of them as they were on the ground. I didn't see that. Now, the replay angles they showed – frankly, for a broadcast of that magnitude, weren't fantastic. I mean, you didn't see the other side replay, the sideline replay that shows Bryant's elbow going to the ground until the very end of that whole sequence. I didn't think they did a very good job of showing at least us the replays. I'm sure the NFL had better replays to look at, but I didn't see contact between the two of them. I may very well have missed it, but I didn't see it. I didn't think there was any contact between the two of them.
Well, whether there was or not, the play stood as an incomplete pass. The Cowboys gave up the ball. I have seen a number of people say, well, it's a dumb call because on 4th and 2, you should have run the football. But, you know, if they don't reverse the call, then everybody's calling Jason Garrett a genius. So folks need to put that that argument to bed immediately. I mean, that's 20 hindsight that nobody could see.
Yeah, and you know what? They had exactly what they wanted in that look. Bryant had a quiet first half, and it was because they bracketed coverage on him, just like the Lions did most of that game last week. They had a safety playing high, shaded to that side of the field, so Bryant was double-covered significantly for most of the game. But as the game went on, I think the Packers felt like they had to start gambling a little bit because it was close, and they had to start trying to get more pressure on the receivers and more pressure on Romo. So they played a lot more single coverage on Bryant in the second half, and I said, don't be surprised if Bryant starts making catches, if they start going to single coverage, and that's exactly what they did. They had he had a 3 to 4 inch height advantage on Sam Shields. It was a great pass by Romo. I mean, for that type of a play, that's a high percentage play. It just didn't quite go the Cowboys' way.
Well, and then obviously, again, that call was huge, but there were, and Jason Garrett, to his credit, said what everybody should be saying right now. Yes, that call was huge. It was a horrible way for a great football game to be decided. But the Cowboys had their opportunities, and there are some facts that we have to deal with. Number one, the Cowboys' defense could not stop Aaron Rodgers in the second half. Aaron Rodgers was perfect in the second half, and this was a guy that could barely move. They never could get pressure on him.
Yeah, that they decided to rush primarily four guys against the Packers today. And I kind of felt like in the game, you know, they had a couple of different choices. They could either rush four and keep seven guys back and kind of dare Aaron Rodgers to pick them apart, thinking that, you know, if he wasn't that mobile, you know, the Cowboys could get some pressure on him. Or they, you know, would try to mix things up a little bit, you know, show him a lot of different looks, do a lot of different things with them and try to keep them off balance. I felt like they did a pretty good job of that in the first half because they were using some blitzes off the side with Orlando Scandrick out of the slot. They were actually doing a fairly decent job of getting some pressure on Rodgers, you know, at times. Rodgers definitely was not loose the first half. He wasn't moving around that great. But the second half, I think his calf got loose, and I think he got a little confidence under his belt that he could, you know, of what he could do with that injury, you know, throughout the rest of the football game. And the Cowboys decided at that point, I think we're going to be content to rush four guys, keep seven guys back in coverage, you know, see if we can play the field. And they probably played as much of a true Tampa 2 as they've played in probably 2 months in terms of just how they did things. And ultimately, it ended up burning them because they couldn't quite do enough to stop Eddie Lacy on the run. And it seemed like every time the Packers needed a big pass out of Aaron Rodgers, they got it.
No question about that. Another huge play in the ball game was the fumble by DeMarco Murray for two reasons. He turns the ball over. The Packers were able to turn that into a field goal. But the bigger issue was there was absolutely nobody in front of him when the ball got stripped. He would have scored on about a 60-yard run. There was no one near him and no one in front of him. That hole was so big.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to talk about a swing play, a game that swung the play one way or the other, that's the play, not the Dez Bryant catch, non-catch. That is the play that, in my opinion, swung this football game because you're absolutely right. He had a huge hole. I mean, it was massive. All he had to do was get through it, get to the second level. I don't think anybody could have caught him. Julius Peppers made a fantastic play. I mean, Julius Peppers was out of position. He had been blocked out of position off the edge, and he did a fantastic job of getting his arm in there just enough to force that fumble. We talked about this at times, especially early in the season. DeMarco Murray's penchant for fumbling is going to come back and bite the Cowboys on the butt at some point. Well, this was the point. This was the day. This was his sixth lost fumble of the season. And if you're going to be an elite running back in the NFL, you simply cannot fumble. Yes, Julius Peppers made a great play, but you simply cannot fumble in that situation. It was a huge momentum swing, even though the Cowboys were able to hold him to a field goal. But I don't think the Cowboys were ever quite the same after that in terms of just, you know, being able to move the football, being able to exert influence on the game that up until that point they had been able to do a pretty good job of.
Another critical call of the ball game, I believe, Matthew, you tell me if I'm wrong on this, but I think it was the first drive of the the second possession they had in the fourth quarter when they thought they had made a first down, and yet right before the commercial break, apparently the spot was challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right after the commercial break when they came back to action, right after the commercial break, it had taken all that time, and the Cowboys had already sent their offense back on the field thinking they were going to run a first down play. And then all of a sudden Jason Garrett looks up and they've decided they're going to make it. They've not given them the first down. Now it's fourth down and two. And there are a lot of people griping about the fact that the Cowboys didn't run the ball there. But I thought that the timing of the ruling after the Cowboys had called a timeout, thinking they were going to be running a first down play, I thought that was a really critical a piece of officiating there that was very unfortunate, and the Cowboys didn't adjust.
Yeah, that was actually end of the first half, I think, if memory serves.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and first of all, it was just bad timing on the timeout. I mean, that was just bottom line. I mean, they may not have reviewed it up in the booth had they not given them enough time to actually review it. But they had already called the timeout before there was even an that was just unfortunate. Now, the reversal, the moving them back 2 yards, that was the right call. I was watching the line of scrimmage during that play, and I said to myself, there's no way in the world Jason Witten made that first down. That they gave him a very favorable spot. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, or maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't. I thought they should have run it on that play, and here's why. It was actually a third down play, third and one. On their previous three third and ones in that game leading up to that play, they had converted all three of them. The Cowboys' offensive line was doing its job. They were moving people around. They were opening up holes for DeMarco Murray. They also had two timeouts to work with. They had 40 seconds left. They had plenty of time to keep trying to put themselves in a position to score a touchdown or get a field goal. I think based on what they were doing at that point in the game, that was the higher percentage call.
And then on top of that, I think in that same drive, that's when Bailey's 50-yard field goal, he missed it the first time. When it was 45 mm-hmm. yards, a penalty was called. He missed it the first time. And then the second time, the field goal was blocked, or at least
right.
missed. They completely missed it at that point. And so it stays 14-7, and so 17-7. And then Aaron Rodgers and company are able to drive the length of the field with 29 seconds to go and get a field goal right at the end of the half. That's huge.
Yeah, that was certainly a swing. I kind of felt like at that point in the game, going into halftime, I felt like, yeah, that was a swing, but the way the Cowboys are playing right now, the way they seem to be able to run the football, the way they're moving things around up at the front of the pile, I didn't feel like it was a killer, but it was certainly a swing when you consider that the Cowboys probably could have played it a little bit more conservatively on that third down, gotten the yard, taken a timeout, maybe taken a couple of shots at the end zone. And then if you don't get it, then you kick the field goal. And at least that way, you don't give the Packers any more time to get points on the board at the end of the half.
Well, when it was all said and done, the Cowboys lose the ball game by a score of 26-21. Again, you know, I looked at so many things in this ball game, but one of the things that infuriates me, I actually saw this on one of the internet posts about the game, one of the stories about the game on one of the websites, where the headline was, Romo still can't win the big one. Romo played a fantastic game today.
He did. He really did. I mean, he didn't make any mistakes. I mean, the only thing you could really quibble with is he took a couple of sacks late in the game where I felt like he might have been able to go ahead and just unload the football early on. You know, the fumble that he had on the – that was actually the third and one play where they decided to pass, had to roll out, and yeah, darn near threw a touchdown pass to Terrence Williams in that play. Darn near threw an interception, too. But, you know, he had a great ball game. I mean, we've been talking a lot about – I know there's been a lot of chatter about Aaron Rodgers out there, and I think some Cowboys fans feel slighted that Romo is not being talked about enough. Tony Romo, last six games of the year, 16 touchdown passes, one interception, just a stratospheric quarterback rating. The way I look at it, if you're looking ahead the next few years, he's got 6 months now to get his body right, you know, completely right, to the point where he's not, you know, struggling to get that back loose so often. If they're able to keep most of the pieces around him, they're in great shape for next year. If this is the way you can manage him the next 2-3 years, as you get through this massive contract that Jerry Jones signed him to, then the Cowboys are going to be in very good shape. They got to get some pieces on defense, but they've got everything they need on offense to protect him, to give him the time that he needs to be successful. And you know, we could very well be seeing, you know, that kind of late career renaissance that John Elway had. Not that Tony Romo is John Elway, but it's the same kind of thing. He's got pieces now around him completely. You know, guys that can help him make plays, guys that can help him score touchdowns, where Tony Romo doesn't have to do everything on the field like he used to a couple of years ago. I still don't know if he can get any better than he is as far as just his true ceiling as a player, but when you've got pieces around him like this, you don't have to be. You don't have to stress about that. You just have to go out and play. So perhaps the next 2-3 years we see the kind of Tony Romo that we've been really wanting to see, out of the Cowboys. And, you know, this, you know, everybody's hopeful right now, even with the loss. Everybody's hopeful that this 13-5 season leads the Cowboys back to being a playoff team over the next few years and one that could potentially contend for a Super Bowl.
One of the things I want to point out in this ball game was this was one time where the script didn't work exactly according to plan, and that the Cowboys won the time of possession, but the Packers ran almost 20 more plays in this ball game than the Cowboys did, and the Cowboys didn't get to 50 plays in the ball game. And the Packers had that was one of those problems where the defense really got exposed today.
Yeah, and I mean, I think some folks coming into this game probably didn't give Eddie Lacy a whole lot of credit just in their ability to control the football game, because what the Packers really want to do is they're a West Coast team, so they really want to get Aaron Rodgers in a rhythm early in this game and then let their running game kind of come from behind late in the game and kind of, you know, run the hammer down. You know, West Coast system is completely different that way. You use the pass and stuff to run. This was a day where I felt like, you know what, with Aaron Rodgers being as hobbled as he is, they don't want to expose him too much. So they might go to Eddie Lacy early and, you know, try to pound the run a little bit. And that's exactly what they did. He was successful for a time doing that. There was a time in the middle of this game where the Cowboys did a really good job of controlling him and limiting him from a statistical standpoint. But late in the game, he broke a couple of big runs that put them in a position to score that last touchdown of the game. So, I think if there's anything that, you know, lay people watching this game probably didn't expect was for the Cowboys to control, or excuse me, for the Packers to control kind of possession the way they did. Because in the games that they've lost at home in the postseason over the last few years, they've lost the kind of possession game in a big way. On this day, they did a very good job of controlling the line of scrimmage, controlling the clock. You know, they didn't win the time of possession game, but they did more than enough to put themselves in position to win the game.
Again, a gut punch, really a tough loss, and now the Cowboys have got to decide what they're going to do about DeMarco Murray and Dez Bryant. Who's going to get the big payday and who's going to get the franchise tag, if that happens?
First of all, you got to see what the cap's going to be. Right now, the Cowboys have about $130 million committed in salary for 2015. Right now, most folks believe that the salary cap for 2015 is going to be $150 million, somewhere in that range. We won't know the true figure until about late February, because they've got to take into account all the revenue and things like that. And remember, the numbers jumped a couple of times in the offseason last year, partly because of that contract that the NFL signed to CBS for Thursday Night Football to have a simulcast on both the NFL Network and CBS. That actually led to a jump in the salary cap for some of these teams, or for all of these teams, rather. So you got to know what you're doing there first. Then you've got to figure out, well, who's worth the money long term? To me, Dez Bryant is worth the money long term. This guy does things that only two or three different wide receivers in the NFL can do. He's that special. It's not that DeMarco Murray is not a great player. It's not that DeMarco Murray doesn't do special things. But with this offensive line, you can make a case where you can say, if I've got two or three guys that can run the ball well behind this offensive line, you know, I can be as productive as, you know, Murray has been this year, or at least effective enough to allow your offense to be effective. I think if you're going to use a franchise tag on anybody, you use it on Murray, partly because it's going to cost you less money. You put the franchise tag on Bryant, it's going to be probably, you know, $10, $11 million. You put the franchise tag on Murray, it's only going to be about six or seven.
And then the Cowboys have to figure out about what they're going to do about the defense. They've got some free agents on defense. One specifically is Rolando McClain. You got to bring him back, don't you? You got to pay him.
Yeah, I think you got to find a way to bring him back. The real question is, what is his value on the free agent market? I don't really know what his value is, because he was retired for a year. He had a good year this year, but he was banged up quite a bit of the year, too. Missed most of today's game with a concussion. He's now missed basically the bulk of the last two or three games with concussion, illnesses, injuries, et cetera. So first of all, you have to figure out what his value is as a player. And I'm not sure if, you know, you measure him as a first-round pick, which is what he was, or if you measure him as a guy who's been in the league for a few years and has done some nice things, but, you know, maybe not worth, like, a huge long-term contract. You know, I venture to say the Cowboys will probably try to bring him back on, like, a two- or three-year deal with a nice bonus and a good base salary. But I don't think they break the bank to do it.
And then, of course, there's the draft. Where do you see the Cowboys focusing their draft when it gets time to start trying to put these pieces together that will make this team better next year?
Well, assuming that, you know, you're talking about best player available, assuming it's a defensive player, I think that's where you look. I mean, you could use anything from a defensive standpoint. You need guys that can help you in the pass rush game, specifically at the end position, although DeMarcus Lawrence had a nice finish to the season, two sacks in his first two playoff games. They could use some depth at linebacker. You know, you get Sean Lee back, that's going to be like a first-round pick right there. But, you know, they could also use some depth there. They need help at secondary, too, because for all the great things that guys like Orlando Scandrick have done this season, you know, Brandon Carr has, you know, picked up his play a little bit. Sterling Moore's done some nice things. There's still the question about, you know, is Morris Claiborne even going to be able to do anything for you next year? Not that he won't be healthy, but is he really a right fit for this system now? So I think anywhere you look at it from a defensive standpoint, that's where I'm looking, assuming that the value's there on the big board. One of the biggest considerations Jerry Jones is going to have to make, and this is a story that's developing right now, is it looks like there's a good chance Rod Marinelli will leave Dallas to go to Tampa Bay to join Lovie Smith there as his either his defensive coordinator or as a defensive consultant, something like that. But that's kind of happening right now. The Cowboys could lose Marinelli, who was a huge part of their success this season and taking a lot of really just, you know, guys off the street, guys that weren't huge, you know, big names in the NFL and turning them into a functional defensive unit.
Yeah, I think I'd try to chain him to the office.
I totally agree with you, and I think Jerry Jones would try it, but, you know, I think this is an issue where, you know, Rod Marinelli and Lovie Smith have known each other for more than 20 years. They've been great friends for a long time. They worked together in Tampa Bay. They worked together in Chicago. They've got a great relationship, and, you know, I have to imagine that that's kind of where they're approaching it. And, you know, Marinelli's in his 60s. You know, he's probably getting ready to retire in a few years. You know, there are worse places in the world to retire than Tampa. I don't know if he has a home there or not, but that may be how he's looking at it. I think it's more the relationship than anything else. His comfort with the fact that he's known Lovie Smith for 20 years, that he's functioned under Lovie Smith as his boss before and has done good things with that. You know, I don't think money is going to be a swaying consideration here.
All right. Any other areas on this thing, loose ends that we need to tie up that we haven't mentioned tonight?
You know, I think from the standpoint of just the season, you know, we've talked about it before. I had them at 6-10. I think you had them at maybe 5-11. I'm not sure. I mean, I think both of us thought that based on everything that we had seen in the offseason, this team was going to fall off the map and implode. And they didn't. And they didn't for a variety of reasons. And I think the three biggest reasons to me are, A, they discovered their running game. By investing in their offensive line and by riding DeMarco Murray to a potential MVP-level season. They found an offensive coordinator, Rod Marinelli, who was able to take a defense and actually make it better than the sum of their parts. He actually got this defense to buy into doing things on a fundamental basis, and when they played fundamental football, they won games. And I think you have some credit to Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones, too. You know, Garrett, I think he kind of fought the idea of just being an overseer head coach a couple of years ago, but I think it's become the best thing for this football team because he's become a better game manager, he's become a better team manager. He now has the type of team he wants, which is a focused, disciplined, physical team that will do the kinds of things he wants them to do to win. And he is certainly deserving of a new long-term contract from Jerry Jones. And I have no doubt in my mind that Jerry Jones will get it done. And you got to give Jones some credit for this season. You got to say, hey, first of all, he shouted down his better angels when it came to Johnny Manziel and instead took the unsexy pick in Zach Martin. And all Zach Martin did was become the first rookie all-pro offensive lineman in 76 years. So that pick there worked out extremely well. DeMarcus Lawrence, I think, could end up being a very nice player for them. I don't know if he'll be dominant, but he's starting to show some nice signs. Anthony Hitchens had a nice year, played every linebacker position for them. They had a solid draft, and Jerry gambled on giving up a draft pick to get Rolando McClain, and that worked out really well. So, you know, it certainly slammed Jerry Jones when it's, you know, when he deserves to be slammed, but for this particular season, he deserves nothing but praise. He pushed the right buttons this year, gave his head coach tools that he was able to use to turn this team around and put it in a position where if they can carry this momentum forward the next 6-8 months, they very well could be a favorite, not just in the NFC East, but potentially a favorite in the NFC.
Well, it has been a great football season. One question, a couple of things. Do you think we've seen the last of Peyton Manning today?
I don't think we have, but that very well could be the last time we see Peyton Manning, you know, seriously contend for a Super Bowl. I mean, John Elway went all in this year. I mean, and brought in every potential tool that team needed to win a Super Bowl. I mean, Emmanuel Sanders, DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller got healthy. He brought in all kinds of guys, and they got beat today by a team in Indianapolis that's younger, faster, and, you know, showed a propensity for running the football. You could say that if the Colts go into New England next weekend and win the AFC Championship game and go to the Super Bowl, you could say that this represents the changing of the guard when it comes to quarterbacks in the AFC. You know, for a decade, it's been Manning and Brady and Manning. Now, all of a sudden, it could be Andrew Luck's conference to rule for the next 5-7 years, especially if they can go in there and beat New England. Luck didn't play fantastic, but that Colts team proved to me that they're more than just a quarterback with a great passing game. They know how to run the ball. They know how to run it effectively. They've got a solid defense. They've got a great coach in Chuck Pagano. They could be the team that's rising in this AFC over the next few years.
All right, and then based on what you've seen of the Final Four now in the NFL, who do you think goes to the Super Bowl and who do you think wins it?
Out of the NFC, I think it's going to be Seattle. I mean, the Seahawks have just been playing great football since they got their defense straight a couple of months ago. Plus, I don't think that they're going to be sitting back and rushing four against Aaron Rodgers all game next weekend like the Cowboys did. I think Rodgers will have a far more difficult time being effective with that injured calf against the Seattle defense. So I think they go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. And then out of the AFC, I think the New England Patriots do it one more time. I think they get out of the AFC. It's going to be a really close game. It's not going to be the blowout where they blew the Colts out a couple of months ago. That's not going to happen this time around. So I think it's going to be New England and Seattle, and then I think Seattle's going to win the Super Bowl because, honestly, they have the best defense in football, and they're going to find a way to mess with Tom Brady's head the way that they messed with Peyton Manning's head a year ago.
All right, Matthew, what's coming up on RattlinHomeSports.com in the coming days?
Well, our first and 10 piece is up on the site right now. That's our game review from the Packers game. And, of course, we'll be getting ready to, wrap up the season. You know, we'll be starting to post to the Cowboys free agents are. We'll be starting to look at, you know, reviewing the season and what went right, what went wrong, and then start talking about the draft, free agency, salary cap, things like that. So it's the NFL. There is no off season. You just take a couple of days off and you come back and you start over again.
Yep, it never ends. Matthew, great stuff. It's been a fun season. I'm sure we'll be talking as the off season, as big things happen with free agency and when we start talking about getting ready for the draft and so forth. We'll be talking more as those events come along. So looking forward to visiting with you, but enjoy your break.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
All right, Matthew Poston's covering the Dallas Cowboys for RattlinHumpSports.com. I'm Brian Houston. Thanks very much for listening to this podcast of the Cowboys in their season with a 26-21 heartbreaking loss to the Green Bay Packers in the divisional playoffs, but a great season. We want to appreciate you and thank you very much for listening to the podcasts all year long. You can check them all out on RattlinHumpSports.com. Thanks again for listening tonight. Hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you sometime down the line.